Hey, this is H-Form. We're going to be running it back with another episode talking about chess knowledge, chess wisdom, and chess understanding again. And today I got with me a very cool guest, got Aiden here. And he has a chess business, and I'm really excited to speak with him about a visualization. And I know that the audience needs help with visualization, calculating, things of that nature. I already went over episodes on visualization, but I got a guest here that can teach you more about it. So, would you like to introduce yourself?
Amazing. Thanks, Devon. My name's Aiden. I run Don't Move Until You See It. And I'm a adult improver, picked up chess a few years ago and stumbled into this wild world of visualization after getting some rapid results for myself and now doing it for a bunch of people that have gone through my courses and things. It's been a wild couple of years. I'm looking forward to diving into it with you.
Yeah, and actually, you know what? Let's just start from the beginning, like little Aiden. All right, let's see.
Oh,
What was little Aiden doing visualizing chess positions?
little Aiden. The littlest Aiden that dealt with chess was Lockdown Aiden. So
Oh.
chess is a very new thing for me. Comparatively speaking, I turned 30 a couple weeks ago, so when I picked it up at 27, which
Okay.
is according to general chess law, far too late to be any good. but I
Don't
deeply
tell
disagree with
people
that statement.
that. Don't tell
Yeah.
people that. All right. We don't need to know those statistics. All right.
Oh man. I mean,
Yeah,
to be honest, I think the belief that that is the case is part of the reason the statistics lean that way. I think there's nothing stopping an
yep.
adult from doing well.
Yep.
So yeah, I picked up over lockdown. I wanted to get better. So I got really, I think it was an Agamotto video kind of grabbed my attention, and then I got hooked to the first PogChamps tournament. I loved the
A got matter video got hooked, got you hooked. It's not the Beth
I think
Harmon
so.
videos, it's not Mittens, is one of those
No,
YouTube videos.
I think the algorithm just picked up that people care about chess, and somehow Agamotto ended up in my feed. So I watched that, and then that led me to PogChamps, which I thoroughly enjoyed. I loved watching people playing moves that I could understand, commentated on by grandmasters. Like, that was a really unique experience, and I think it was for a lot of people.
Did you pick
So
it up from
I,
scratch
yeah.
though, or did you have like prior experience even from 2 years ago?
So I played a little bit, like a tiny bit of chess in like primary school, which is elementary school equivalent, and but I was like, I think I went to the chess club twice, and I think it was that because there was a cute girl there. Like, that was about the extent of my chess involvement. And yeah, I think that was basically it. And I just basically didn't touch it again until lockdown.
That kind of makes sense though. It is what it
Yeah.
is. Like I could see like a decade ago or a couple decades ago, it wasn't as popular. And I think the audience needs to understand this. Chess wasn't as popular 2 decades ago.
No,
People were
not
still
even close,
getting
yeah.
like clowned on, like being a chess player for some reason, especially at my schools, like the schools that I went to. It wasn't the guy that was popular. I can say that. All right.
It was also like there was a few people went to the chess clubs, the kind of school chess club in Australia, just because like in summer it gets really hot here. So the classrooms were air conditioned, so it was an excuse to be inside for lunchtime at school. For a lot of people. But chess isn't really a big thing here. And even with the big boom, it still hasn't super taken off in Australia. Like, there's obviously a lot more people playing online, but the chess clubs aren't that much more busy than they were. And just yeah, it's a little kind of slower down under.
Yeah,
So
so Australia, I don't know any like grandmasters from Australia.
we don't have that
Or I
many.
probably Okay.
Our, I think we've had 9 total, or maybe we have 9 currently, but it's not a big number that we've had total. Our current top player is Anton Smirnov, who's a very cool dude.
Oh, you met him?
I think he was actually one of the first people I reached out to when I sort of came up with this method and did all that sort of stuff, and I was like, am I barking up the wrong tree? But he was very encouraging, which was lovely. Just yeah, he's a really nice guy. I think he peaked it 200 in the world or something, and I think that's the highest we've ever had.
That's really awesome. So, this is actually a weird story because I didn't know that you just now started learning how to play chess 3 years ago. And then, like, where did the chess business fit in there while you was learning how to play chess?
It's kind of strange. I stumbled into it is the main thing I can say. It was locked down. It was kind of a lot of things were stagnant, and I really wanted my rating to go up. I think I kind of overly emotionally attached to something that I could see progress. I'm in Melbourne, so Melbourne was the most locked down city in the world for a very, very long time. We were locked down, I think, a total of like 9 months or something. So it was like a lot of like, okay, nothing is moving in any part of my life, but there's this number attached to my chess rating that I can, if I work, I can see that go up. And that was really important to me. And I tried to do the normal stuff. I bought a couple courses. I did like some tactics work, end games work. I bought a couple of chess books, and it wasn't making that much of a difference. Like I stopped, like I had a trap early, and I stopped falling to those traps early, but beyond that, I didn't feel much of an improvement. There was a bit of a bump, and then kind of nothing, despite putting in a couple hours of work a day. So, I was about 750 blitz at this point.
Yeah, you hit that barrier that
And
everybody hits, that
yeah,
big cap.
exactly. And I was like looking at, I just like, well, that seems really like it seems like I'm putting a lot of work for not a lot of result. What's going on? Did a little looking on Reddit because I had no familiarity with the chess universe at all, and it seems that it's a very, very, very normal thing for chess to put in a lot of work and see no growth.
You just related to like millions of chess players, right?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, wow, okay. And but for me, like I long before I got into chess, I was actually a big fan of Josh Waitzkin, but not for his chess stuff, more for his learning stuff. And Josh Waitzkin and his work with Tim Ferriss, especially, sort of led me to different approaches to learning and different ways to deconstruct skills and put them back together and try and find kind of rapid ways to grow. And just for the fun of it, because there was nothing else to do, I figured what would happen if I tried to deconstruct chess, if I forgot everything I know about what I should do to get better, and I approached it totally fresh as a 750 blitz player. What would I do? That process led me to a ton of research, and that research led me to videos of guys like Hikaru, Vishy, talking about visualization being this incredibly important part of the game. More recently, there's been a Fabiano Caruana video where he says it's the single most important thing in the game. And then I was looking at all the books and the courses I was doing, and no one's talking about visualization. Looking at the videos, and it's just not mentioned. It's not part of it. And if it
You know why
is,
it's
it's very
not
much in
mentioned?
passing.
You know why it's not
Why is it not
mentioned?
mentioned?
Because it's boring. It's boring. It doesn't get the
It's true. It's
Shoot.
there's oh man, yeah. So I started messing around. That same video with Hikaru, he said the best way to learn visualization was blindfold chess. So I tried that as a 750 rated blitz player, and it didn't go well.
Yeah,
It did not
I
go
bet. Like, yeah.
well.
All
But
right.
it led me to the next step, and that's kind of what generated everything else. As I sat down, I tried blindfold chess, and I went, okay, this is way too hard, and it's too fuzzy. There's this one belief I have, one kind of core thing to my learning approach in anything I do, and it's this idea of isolate and intensify. So, whenever we're trying to learn something, we need to isolate the part we're trying to work on, like take it away so that we can totally focus on that part of the skill. Get away, get rid of as much else as we possibly can. And then intensify it. We want to train at a difficulty that's higher than we actually need in context. Because when we go back to, in this case, a game of chess, it's so much easier to visualize or whatever than it was before. So I went, okay, what if I isolated an intensified visualization? And I basically figured I would try blindfold chess without the decisions. So I recorded myself reading notation for a game. And then I would listen back to it with my eyes closed and try and follow everything that was happening and understand what's happening in the game. And I picked stuff from different openings, ones I didn't play, completely unfamiliar positions. And I tried to just, in my mind, keep track of everything that was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Recorded a 25 move game because I'm a little overconfident at times. And
wow.
And I fell off by move two. The knights came out and I was already confused.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. And I went back and I went back to the beginning of the audio and I listened again and again. I went over it again. And when I lost track of something or a move didn't make sense, I'd go back to the beginning again. Mm-hmm. And I did that for about 10 minutes and went, okay, that was a fun experience. And then I started playing some games and my brain was just giving me things. I sensed that something had sort of opened up, that I was spotting knight forks three or four moves down the line. I wasn't hanging my queen in one move. I wasn't blundering checkmate in one move. These mistakes that had haunted me, it just all kind of went away. And that was fascinating. And over the next 2 weeks, I jumped 250 points. In the 4 weeks after that, I jumped another 250 points. Yeah. So in 6 weeks, I'd gone up 500 points. After being stuck and feeling stuck and doing all that. And the only thing that changed is I was doing this visualization practice for 10 minutes each day. I actually stopped doing all the other stuff as well.
What was the other stuff that she was doing so that the audience can know?
Oh, it was some openings practice at a Gotham Chess course for openings.
You got trapped with the opening crap. You're not
really, yeah, so
my philosophy, you're not, I didn't even know any openings, all right, when I started out playing chess, and everybody gets caught up with, let me learn the Karo Kan and this line, and it's like, no, you don't even understand how to get checkmate with the queen and king.
Exactly. Like I did even that a little bit. I had is it 1,000 checkmate patterns and 100 endgames you must know, like those on Chessable. I had those two. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they were stunning. Good. They were very good. But yeah, so I did those three things and I was working through those things. And the checkmate patterns were incredibly helpful. I mean, all three of them were very useful in their own way, but I didn't feel that the stuff I was learning was coming out in my games. That was kind of the issue. Like I was learning stuff in my studying and then I'd be playing and nothing I was learning was appearing. I was being overly reliant on what I'd memorized about my opening at 700 blitz and no one's playing the main line stuff. And it's so, but yeah, like, and visualization sort of unlocked a lot of that for me. And that was, part of that rise. And I realized after I looked at rating graphs and stuff that I'd gone from the bottom of the bell curve to the top of the bell curve, in 6 weeks. And I was like, okay, well, I'm reasonably entrepreneurial. Maybe there's something here that other people could benefit from as well, that it could sort of go out and sort of help people with this one part of the game and, I don't know, maybe make a few bucks on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started showing it to masters, and one of the first people I showed it to was Anton, and he was very excited about it. Then I started showing it to some people on Fiverr. I started hiring chess masters for coaching, and then when they would jump into the session, I'd be already screen sharing my system and ready to show them to get their opinions, like just sort of flipping the tables on them. But that was big for me because several of them started using it in their training for tournaments themselves. This is like FIDE masters and WFMs and and stuff, and I was sitting here at like maybe 1500 rapid or something at the time, and and a FIDE master's going, oh, I'm going to use this for my next tournament. I'm going, what is going on? And that's basically how this became a business, of sort of going, oh, maybe I've actually stumbled into something important in the chess world.
So wow, that's really amazing that you like tricked grandmasters on Fiverr. I'm pretty sure they didn't mind because it was getting paid for anyway, but
exactly,
that's really interesting though that you actually just thought about this idea, because I can see in the chessboard that visualization, first of all, There's two parts to this. First of all, people think that visualize like grandmasters visualize 20 moves down the line, which is a myth. That does not happen at all. And then secondly, most people don't even focus on visualization, even during the opening. Like, for example, in my life, and for all the kids that is listening, don't do this in school. But and actually, this is a nerdy thing to do in school anyway. You should get beat up for it. But I used to have this big chess volume.
Amazing.
I used to have this chess opening book, right? And it had no pictures in it. It just had variations. And when I was bored in class, I used to just go through the variations of my openings that I play just in my head.
Yeah,
And
amazing.
I would just do
Amazing.
that. I would just go through lines and then I'll try out the lines when I got home on chess.com on elitechess.org. And so
Yeah.
that's partly a visualization, but it seems like that you have more of a system, like a platform that is primarily for that can help you out, which is visualization is really important because it brings you to calculating really fast. And most people don't think that they can do so, but it is very simple to do it.
It's actually, I've realized it goes a little bit deeper. Even than that is kind of been the strange thing. So my obsession for the last 12 months of doing this, I've been doing a lot of reading and like talking to people in like neuroscience and psychology and trying to understand kind of how brains handle information in general and then how they handle chess information specifically. And what I've realized with it is that visualization is sort of a MacGuffin. Like it's the being able to see moves ahead is definitely useful. Like it's super useful for calculating. It's very important if you're in critical positions to be able to do that. But for the majority of chess players, the more important part of visualization is actually about our working memory and how well we handle chess information in our working memories. So like to I suppose to quickly explain what I mean by that, the studies have shown we've got between 5 and 9 slots in our short-term memory, like slots for information, and they store in chunks of sorts. So like bits of information related to a certain idea get stored into one slot. But we've got 7 slots and 32 pieces on a chessboard. So that's a lot of information to try and fit in 7 slots. And our brains don't do it very well. They do it very badly, like absolutely very badly. And we feel it, we see it in our games. Like if you've ever had the experience of calculating a big attack, getting really excited, and then hanging your queen to a sniper bishop, it's like you're not doing that because you're stupid, you're doing that because your working memory got overloaded. You spent all 7 of your slots thinking about that attack. And your brain pushed out the bishop because it wasn't relevant to what was important to you at that moment. And you just literally forgot the bishop was there. It's nothing to do with intelligence or anything. It's just your brain couldn't handle all that information. Same thing with the classic. I did this all the time. Like where you've got your candidate moves and you pick the first one. You sort of look first one you calculate it out a bit and you go, oh, that's really bad. I lose a knight almost instantly with that. I'm not going to do that. So then you calculate another move, and then you calculate another move, and then you calculate another move, and then you play the first move you thought of. And you lose the knight instantly and you go, oh, I knew that. I had already calculated that. And that's the same deal. That's just your working memory overloading. What visualization training does is, especially blindfold training, it forces us to get really efficient at holding chess information in those slots in our working memories, which means when we get good at it, when we're on a big attack, we don't forget the bishops there because our brain can handle that information. And that's been the biggest, for me, I think that's why I had the 500 point jump in 6 weeks. It's just because it's why I stopped blundering like really obvious, easy blunders. It's because I could actually start handling that. I didn't have to drop the bishop information in order just to calculate my attack, if that makes sense.
So I'm guessing this technique can be used in other stuff too, in other games, et cetera, that maybe there's too much information and you just need to not be overloaded, because I think chess players or grandmasters intuitively know this, that that's what happening, because I know for myself, I always tell my audience, hey, put the most pressure on your opponents as possible to make sure they make a mistake, and then take the opportunity to get into a winning position from that mistake that the opponent does. And so
absolutely,
it's pretty much the premise. I just don't have all the fancy terminology.
That's right. The fancy terminology I learned from Super Smash Brothers. There was a Super Smash Brothers podcast I listened to, and they were talking about exactly that. They were talking about, even when you're down, like, just keep causing issues for your opponent, because eventually you'll overload their mental stack.
Because, and, you know, grandmasters like prying or poking the bear. You like, and it's on the computer, it shows, oh, this is a completely equal position. But by doing these small little pokes, you know, a certain player can't handle all of it at one time. And actually, that happened in like this recent World Chess Championship, where Ding Liren, he played perfectly after the fifth game against Jan Nepo. And Jan Nepo, he just stopped seeing stuff in the last six games, and he just stopped playing perfect moves. And he was actually missing opportunities that he should have taken.
Absolutely. So, yeah. It's like, it's so much, it's such a big part of the game. That kind of mental thing. And there's been studies shown on how easily and quickly our working memories can be overloaded. There was a great study done, they talk about in Thinking Fast and Slow, but a great study done where they showed how time pressure just destroys like the capacity of your working memory. And,
that's funny.
Yeah. And this was just with mental equations that they were doing, but I was reading this and going, oh yeah, yeah, I've definitely experienced time pressure destroying my ability to keep track of what's happening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's why you should always be up on time.
Always. Easier said than done.
Yeah, I know, right? Yep.
But yeah, it's been a wild ride. Yeah.
Yeah. So where's the business now? Like, actually, when did you exactly start during the pandemic?
So I picked up chess in 2020. The first version of the website launched in April 2021. So I've just crossed 2 years. Yeah, 2 years and a month or something at this point.
All right.
Running it, and the first year things were a bit rough, as I was like working out how do I run a chess thing. I've got no idea. Like, if you told me 3.5 years ago I'd be running a chess business, I'd said you were crazy. And trying to get past the kind of imposter syndrome of like, why would anyone listen to me talk about chess?
You got to get past that. That's trash.
And you got to get past that. Yeah. Eventually I realized it's like everyone in the chess world that is like, well, not everyone, but the vast majority of people in the chess world that are like teaching or selling something or providing content, like, started when they were six, which means chess is the first big thing that they learned, and the rest of their life they kind of see through a chess lens.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of realized somewhere in that first year that actually the big benefit for me is that I don't have that. That's actually a huge plus. I see chess through the lens of the rest of my life. So I see chess through a lens of guitar and films and other skills I've learned. And that allows me to bring totally new perspectives into the space that aren't necessarily there. That's how I got past imposter syndrome. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you want to get past it, just go on Twitch, look at somebody that has a 500 ELO chess.com rating and be like, wow, he's not the best, but he's trying his hardest, you know. He's killing it on the stream. Not he's on really the chess going board, for it, but yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well done. But I know, so that's pretty interesting how you see chess, because I just view it as, if you want to apply it to your life, you can. It's easy to do so. Like, for example, I was just doing a chess lesson not too long ago, and I was explaining to this person, you know, in the beginning, chess really humbles you in such a way that nothing else can humble you.
You go on chess.com,
like, okay, I know how the pieces move, I know what check is, and maybe I know what rook checkmate is, and then you just get beat down into the lowest rating possible, and then you're like, ah, man. Dang, this is how
It's
chess
so
really is.
brutal.
It's like
Yeah,
the
like the
opposite of
philosopher in
checkers.
me loves that. Loves it about the game, the just the brutality of it. Like I'm a big fan of like Stoic writings and stuff like that, and the fact that one of the things that drew me to chess is that I could feel if I had any issues with my mindset or any kind of issues with how I handled victory or how I handled defeat or how I handled pressure, I would experience those things like tenfold over a chessboard. And working on them over the chessboard actually helped me work on them in the rest of my life as well. So I love the it lays any mindset issues you have very bare and very in front of you. The game of chess does. And I think it's what's so captivating about it for me.
Exactly. That's cool. And so, but where, like, what are you doing with the business now? Do you have like more grandmasters that you're referring to? Do you like what experiences are you having starting this?
Oh man, it's been really interesting, really fascinating. I have had the great fortune to be sort of collaborating and sort of associated now with several title players, and that's been really cool to see kind of my somewhat kooky, unorthodox blindfold training ideas getting accepted. And I've got a great relationship with Noel Studer. I've done a blog post with him that did really well. And he built some exercises for me that are now in the system. And I've had that sort of relationship now with a couple other streamers. John Curtis, the video master from Australia, same sort of thing. He's built four or five exercises in the system, and which has been really cool to actually have people who know chess far better than I do building visualization exercises and contributing to the system. For me, that's been wild. And also the incredible experience of having an exercise type that I invented. There's got 13 different sort of approaches to visualization training in the system at the moment. So like having something that I invented come back to me, designed by a grandmaster, and actually for the first time be able to completely fresh try one of my own style of exercises. So it was a wonderful experience. So that's been really cool. It's been fantastic to see how it's sort of been accepted into the culture. It's still very early days. It's still building. It's still doing its thing. But I'm starting to see references to it pop up here and there. The username's getting like recognized when I'm in Twitch chat every now and then, and people are posting about it on Reddit. And something that's been really wonderful is that it's been taken up in a big way by the aphantasia community in chess,
What is
which has been
that
really cool.
community?
So aphantasia is a I don't know exactly what the technical term for it is, but it's when you can't see pictures in your head. So when your brain physically can't form images. And a big part of the reason I think my stuff's been taken up in that community is that I'm a big believer, and I've got sort of a lot of reading to back it up, that visualization does not have to be visual. There's a kind of a concept that we need to be seeing a board,
Yeah,
but
what
we
do you?
absolutely don't. Yeah.
Yeah, can you explain that a little bit further?
Yeah, absolutely. In my opinion, whoever came up with the word visualization has a lot to answer for. There's a lot of people out there that super struggle with visualization because they're trying to see a picture when naturally that's not what their brain wants to do. Or something. So in the late 1800s, there was a study done by Alfred Binet, a French psychologist. And he was like proper like granddaddy of modern psychology. He invented a few years later, he invented the first IQ test. But before that, he was studying chess masters, and he was really fascinated by blindfold players in particular. And he went in assuming that blindfold players would have this amazing visual ability in their mind, and was quite surprised to find out that they didn't really. Some of them did, but some of them didn't. There are all sorts of different ways that chess masters, including the world champion at the time, Tarrasch, I think, or I don't know if it was world champion or second or whatever, but Tarrasch was part of that study. And found that a lot of them didn't. And that was, as soon as I read that, I obviously dived in deeper. And I found in the 30s, there was this guy, George Kolfinowski, who was the blindfold simul world champion. He did 34, 37 or something like that games at once. He was going back and forth with Al Yekin for the title for a few years. And he, I found a great interview with him where he wrote that he was asked, how does he keep track of all the information? And he said he records the moves on his mental gramophone and then he plays them back. And this is like blindfold simul world champion. His model, the way he kept track of visualization in his mind was with audio, not pictures. Then I heard about Al Yekin. Sorry, yeah.
I was going to say, we're going to have to hear from like the top 20 grandmasters right now how they do it. Because
I really
want
to know.
Because
yeah.
even there might be some discrepancies because how they play chess back then is completely different how they play chess nowadays, though, too. But what you said kind of, I'm not a blindfold grandmaster. Let me just preface this. But when I'm huge, like I played a blindfold game one time and I was just, I was looking at the chessboard. I don't know if this even counts or not, but I was playing.
That hit me. I'm curious.
I was playing Zen mode on leechess.org and I wasn't even like imagining the pieces. It was just like all just material that I was imagining when I was playing. I won the game surprisingly against like an 1800 for my first time doing blindfold, but I was like,
yeah, nice.
I didn't really have like a clear picture of, you know, you know how in Beth Harmon, the Netflix series where she was looking at the ceiling and there was like
stuff
a
the ceiling,
set and pieces and stuff. That's I don't know how to get to, I don't know how to get to that level, if it's true or not, or I know
some people do.
Nakamura talk about it, but I'm like, you know, that's
some people do. Some people can do that, but if you don't naturally do that, don't try. that's the big takeaway is, like Al Yekin talks about. He said that I realized later because what he wrote doesn't actually match up with a lot of what's out there. So I'm sort of interpreting this as Al Yekin talking about what happens in his head and him just assuming that's also what happens in other people's heads. He says that he doesn't really see pictures. He kept track of everything with what he called his logical memory. So he would see a flash of like if there was a key position and he needed to see how stuff goes together, like he would flash that section of the board in his mind. But in general, he kept track of everything through logical memory. So if he needed to remember where the B pawn was, he would remember that he had to stop knight C4 earlier. So the pawn's on B3. And that was basically his model. That was how he would do things. It was a very logical approach with little flashes of imagery. There's this amazing video with Eric Rosen where he talks about his model, what he sees in his head when he plays blindfold is like a flashlight in a dark room. So like he'll see like this chunk of the board here, and then you'll see this chunk over here, and he'll remember how it all goes together. And with familiar structures, it's like remembering the furniture in your house. Like
that sounds close to what I was trying to say. That sounds a little bit.
Yeah, nice.
See, Eric Rosen is a cool guy.
He's a cool guy.
That sounds close to what I was kind of picturing, but just a little bit off. But yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like our brains are super lazy. Like that's where it's all coming from is our brains are super lazy. None of us are building new pathways in order to visualize in chess. Our brains are trying to reuse and recycle skills that they already have. So our brains have been conceptualizing and trying to make sense of complex information since the day we were born, before we were born by some studies. And because of that, we have already got all of these systems to keep track of complex information. And when our brains are met with chess and trying to keep track of all the information on a chessboard, it naturally wants to reuse stuff that it's already got. And a lot of us aren't letting it do that because we're convinced visualization has to be visual. But it's amazing once we sort of put our brains in a situation like a blindfold training scenario where it has to come up with something, but it has to do something to keep track of it all. And then we trust our brain to just do what it wants to do in handling that. It's really quite fascinating how much that difference
it is
can
quite
make
scary.
And how quickly it can make it.
Like, I would say, what rating would you say for people to start training like that? What rating?
I don't think it's necessarily a rating that's required. I think it's more an experience piece. Like, I started at 750 blitz.
Okay.
You need to have a strong understanding of like basic chess foundations and then absolutely start working on your visualization.
Okay. So for everybody that knows how to piece this move, know what checkmate is. Actually, for everybody who knows how to accurately do en passant, just try out a blindfold chess game. Try out doing something visualizing. All right. I can trust anybody that knows how to do en passant willingly.
Like if you
the audience just cut
it out. Just done. Yeah. It's just that's the point the podcast really just drops off.
Stay.
they're already gone, mate. It's too late.
I know. That's how social media is nowadays. So I know that Magnus Carlsen, in one of his interviews, he said that when he approaches a position, like a very tough position, he already knows the best move, but he double checks it with his calculation too. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't, when he figures out the best move, I don't know if it's like he visualized the position. I don't know exactly what it is. Is there an interview with him even talking about visualization? Do you know?
I haven't run into one with Magnus talking about visualization specifically. I've seen Hikaru one that I can't find anymore, and the Fabi one that's particularly it's accessible. It's really cool. I could probably try and explain what's happening there.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a Bobby Fischer one, because that would be
I'd love to see a Bobby Fischer
character
one.
Of Bobby Fischer explaining visualization. Yeah.
Like there it is. So like, so once you get to like basically grandmasters have a major, well, this is going to be a strange, obvious sentence. They have a major advantage over the rest of us.
Yeah.
But one is like the main piece is that they have such a wealth of positions and like chunks of positions in their long-term memories. So for example, like they can sum up an entire position by saying, yeah, this is a Queen's Gambit, decline main line at the 25th move, but they played Knight C3 here instead or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then that tells them everything they need to know about the position. They understand everything about like all the dynamics, how it's all moving, where all the key squares are, all that.
Right.
We don't have that. Not at all. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's just because they've burned all of these positions in their mind. They've just seen them so, so many times over years and years and years of training. So their visualization for them is, it's like trying to build a Lego model. They just have more bits to put together. Like they've got more templates. Mm-hmm. They've got more kind of guidelines and stuff. We could go down the path of spending years and years and years and years and years training and getting all of those positions in our head as well.
Right.
Or we could get better at handling the positions as they show up. And that's kind of been my sort of thinking with it. So visualization for Magnus and what he specifically does is super interesting, but not incredibly relevant to a beginner player, because he's dealing with a fundamentally different collection of like prerequisites than we are. So like I would love to. I'd absolutely love to know what Magnus sees in his head, and I'd be particularly interested to see what he saw in his head when he was less good. And see kind of how he did that. But that's a really fascinating thing. I think holding up what the grandmasters do as kind of our target for visualization or calculation and stuff like that's probably a bit of a misdirection. It's not quite
all right.
The aim.
So you're not saying for somebody to, what was that one guy? He used recordings in his head to visualize stuff. You're not saying for people to, which is just a weird concept that there is different visualization techniques that people use on a chessboard anyway, because I just thought that there was, most people just think that there is just one, honestly, and just look up in the ceiling. But You know, it's very fascinating learning about all this. It's like, man, you have to be an interesting character to even thinking about
Cheers. Lots of reading. If I have any superpower, it's I'm good at connecting ideas that don't seem like they should go together. And that's kind of led me to this spot. That's kind of my secret sauce, I suppose. Is I can take insights from one area and apply them into a new space. But the as far as like I don't recommend anybody try and copy any other model as far as the main takeaway,
And that's the thing
because
with
it's not going
chess
to work.
too. Yeah, you have to like do your own model, just like how every chess player has
Exactly.
a different personality. It's like,
Yeah.
this
So
has to be so hard.
your brain has this connection to stuff, has this way that it wants to do it. And once you find that, and once you trust to do your brain, and then you train it in the way that it wants to be trained, magic happens. Like it's really exciting. I did a coaching session one time with a guy who one of my longest customers, and he's a super logical guy, like very, very logical. He's an accountant. Has been an accountant his whole life. He like organizes his life with spreadsheets. Like everything is spreadsheets and numbers and very clear logical breakdowns of things. And he was having a lot of trouble with visualization because he's trying to see a picture. And he just wasn't making any progress at all. And he felt this was just this horrible thing letting him down. He would never move forward in his game because he was unable to visualize. It wasn't working. And he didn't have aphantasia. He was just naturally less inclined to see a picture. And with a bit of work and a bit of the especially blindfold training, because it forces your brain to come up with something. If you put your brain under that much pressure and then let it deal with the information however it wants to, you'll generally stumble into your model. Because brains are lazy. It wants to go whatever it wants to do. And just like in the course of that session, like just seeing him be able to connect with the information a lot better. And he realized he has a very logical method. He doesn't see any pictures at all. He remembers the notation in his head. He has like ways that he works out. He relates every diagonal to the opening that the bishop goes on. And like whatever his brain wants to do, he just let himself do it. And now he's like way stronger with his visualization than he's ever been before. And feels like he can make progress. And the only difference was that he stopped trying to see a picture. He instead found what his brain wants to do.
So I got a question, and this is mainly for the audience too. There's a percentage of how to categorize your studying. What percentage would you say somebody would have to focus on visualization to get better?
Cool. My main thing I recommend is start your training, however long you're going to train for, with 10 minutes of blindfold training. So if you're training for 2 hours, 3 hours, whatever, still 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes is probably fine. Do more if you're loving it, do more if you want to focus on it. But that space of just 10 minutes at the start, it gears your brain for whatever's going to come and allows you to kind of obviously make progress with the visualization. There's a story I loved, like from I've got a juggler mate of mine who whenever he has to go out on stage and practice with five balls, he's backstage immediately beforehand doing the same trick with seven, because by the time he goes out on stage he wants it to be easy. And that's the same thing. If we start with 10 minutes of visualization blindfold training before we do the rest of our study, then any calculation, any visualization we have to do over the course of the rest of our study will be super easy by comparison. And that's a very powerful spot to be.
Okay, so because I because okay, so you say 10 minutes each day, that would be sufficient enough. Because I know from my experience, and I tell people this, and other people see this, you can't just stop doing one thing, right? You can't just go all in on visualization and stop playing chess games, stop doing puzzles, stop studying tactics. You got to do pretty much everything all at once in like a bundle, right? And so that's what I would say, because what happens is if you stop playing chess games and just study, then you don't have the experience of playing chess games anymore. You get nervous, you're going to
Absolutely.
start overthinking, and those things just reoccur. And if you just play chess games, then you're going to plateau, you're going to feel bad by not increasing that rating. You're not reaching the rating that you want to reach, and because you're not learning anything else about the game.
Yeah, so, completely agree. Yeah,
yeah. Chess is just a hard game to study. But what priority list would you put it on? Like, would it be under openings? Would it be like visualization? Would it be under openings? Would it be like kind of above?
I'm with Fabiano. I think visualization is the most important part of the game. Like, obviously, I'm biased, but I've seen the results. Because at its core, it is helping us get better at chess information,
mm-hmm.
and how our brain handles that information. And every other part of chess is just chess information. So the better we are at handling it, the better we are at keeping track of what's happening, understanding kind of what's happening in the board. The more we're able to take in with every other part of our study, it's kind of a multiplier for study for me. So I'd say, yeah, comfortably most important, because it feeds everything else and it makes everything else easier.
Okay, makes sense.
And then it's tactics.
I had to look at that Fabio Caruana interview. That sounds
interesting. Yeah, no, I'll send you a link to it for the show notes.
Okay, that sounds good. All right. So I know this is off topic, but we have to spice it up a little bit. You mentioned Super Smash Brothers, so I already know that you got a history playing. Who do you main?
Oh, so I'd actually don't have a history playing it.
Watch tournaments? You watch the tournaments and stuff, or
I sort of stumbled into it a little bit. Like, I don't actually have a background in Smash Brothers at all. I'm just fascinated by opportunities to hear people who are really, really good at something and talk about what they're really, really good at. So I was just on Twitch one day and I saw a stream from Toph talking about the top, like having the top Melee player as a guest.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to go have a look at this. Like, I've played Smash a little bit. I learned a ton just listening to this guy talk about him being good at what he's doing. I find people that are passionate and fantastic at what they do incredibly fascinating, regardless of what the thing is. Sadly, I don't actually have a main.
yeah, that is sad, but it's kind of funny how all those just mix in together. I can see how chess mix in with different type of games that I play. And if you wanted to mix in, then it can, but if you just play chess and just leave it at the board, you could do that too.
Yeah. I find as adults, we learn best if we can apply things from multiple spaces. Kids are just like big sponges and they take in anything from whatever, but adults learn, the more things that we can tie to a new thing that we're learning, the faster we learn. We're absolutely able to have rapid learning experiences, but we need to approach a little bit differently. So I'm a big fan of, like, if you are really good at chess and you want to pick up coding, like, have a look at coding and work out what can you apply from your chess to your coding. What insights, what perspectives, what things do you already understand about chess that also make sense here? And when you do those sorts of things, you often find either totally new insights or at least insights that can speed up your progress way more than just following a step-by-step course.
So do kids play on your platform too?
Yeah, I've had a few come through. Most of the stuff in the system is totally focused on adult learning. The system is difficult because I'm a big fan of that isolate and intensify idea. We want to put our brains under enough pressure to force them to do stuff. And stuff that's too tricky can be a bit of a turnoff for kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I have focused on the adult learner, but I do have some kids that have really engaged with the system. In order to get for, I'd recommend, if there is any sort of parents or coaches with chess kids looking at the system, it needs a guiding hand. Needs a kind of a strong adult encouragement to sort it out. But adults love it. And that's been the market of Aim4. That's who I'm kind of in business for, is to help adults who have less time on their hands see the improvement that they're looking for.
Right. All right. Well, primarily, you said that FIDE Masters and Chess Masters use your platform for tournaments, so that
That's
makes
pretty
sense.
insane. Yeah. I'm
All right.
actually
Well,
kind of
is
curious, like, what's your model?
what's
I'd love to deep dive a little bit into that if you've got the time for it. I'd love to kind of,
my model for what?
yeah,
For
see
like
if I could kind
visualizing?
of give you a bit of value.
Oh man. So I'm not gonna lie, I haven't really focused on that when I'm playing chess, visualizing. It
No, that's cool,
usually
man.
just
Yep.
happens. It's usually
Yeah.
just a pat, oh snap, I know this pattern, and then I just do it. That's and
Yeah.
plus this is probably horrible on my part, but you already actually, I forgot to ask you, what's your chess rating before I go to my story? What's your chess rating
Currently,
right now?
I haven't looked at, I haven't been studying myself for quite some time. I'm much more focused now on helping other people improve. But my current rating is around 1650 rapid chess.com.
Okay.
So I'm in that kind of space. I'm looking, sort of booking out a couple weeks in the sort of month or two. I'm going to deep dive into my own training again, and see how high I can get in that kind of time. But it's been a solid year since I really put consistent study for myself in.
And that's respectable. Like, I would say over 1,000 is respectable. If you can get over 1,000 on chess.com, congrats. That's perfect. I think any chess player could do that. But
Absolutely, yeah.
I was gonna say was, so yeah, everything just comes in a pattern. And since I'm dealing with the business, I don't have
Yeah.
time to deep dive into chess myself. So I got into this habit of just playing faster games, playing bullet,
Yeah.
playing blitz. So I don't really have the time to deep dive in like a 30-minute game to actually calculate the position and to figure out the secrets that I love doing. I just don't got time to do it.
That's
So I
fair.
can't give you like a I can't give
That's
you
all
like
right. I mean,
an exact answer.
if you're interested, I could take you and your audience through an exercise.
Okay, actually, that sounds
If that
fun.
sounds interesting. I'll just write down a game just so I can do the same one. Yeah. All right, cool. I'll just do 4 or 5 moves.
Okay, here we
And
go.
we'll see how we go from there. All right.
All right,
So
here, just what am I doing? Am I?
that's right. So
Okay.
basically close your eyes. And I'm just going to read out some moves, and I'm going to ask a couple questions as we go,
Okay.
as to, and actually, I'll pull up a proper
Don't
big board. I don't
hypnotize
have
me,
this
all
up
right?
here.
I'm not into
Yeah.
that. All right. Don't. I got kids to provide for. All
All
okay.
right. I'm going to read out some moves, and I'm going to try to answer, ask some questions as we go, and I'll just get you to answer them.
Okay.
One, E4, E5, 2, Knight C3, Knight C6. What are those knights doing right now?
Those knights are defending. I mean, the knight on c3 is defending the pawn on e4, and the knight on c6 is defending the pawn on e5.
Beautiful. Bishop C4. Bishop C5. Move four, we have Queen G4. What's that queen doing?
Queen on g4 is attacking a pawn on g7.
Beautiful. What else is kind of in its sight line? Just out of curiosity.
The queen on g4 is attacking a pawn on d7 too.
Nice.
Yeah, it's only attacking those two pawns. I know my bishop on
Cool.
c4 is attacking a pawn on f7, so I'm keeping track of that too.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice. Is the queen defending anything? Not that that thing is being attacked, but
Yeah,
is it acting as a
the queen
defender or
is
anything?
defending the pawn on e4.
Fantastic.
And I guess you could say the pawn on g2.
Cool. Your grasp of vectors is very strong. That's very cool. You're getting the diagonals really quickly. That's fantastic. That's normally a very
Okay.
tricky point for a lot of people. All right. Black plays D6. What did that
Uh-oh.
do?
Attack my queen.
Dude, you're nailing these diagonals.
All right, good. I'm getting there.
Yeah, fantastic, man. What's happening in your head as you're doing this?
An alert went off when you did the move d6 because I was
Yeah, I
expecting
noticed
it.
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it this a position you're familiar with? Like, have you done Viennese stuff before, or is this totally new?
Well, I've played a lot of positions in the past 10 years. And
Yeah.
I used to be an e4 player. So I don't normally do queen g4, but I automatically just danger just flared in my head because
Amazing.
usually I have to like watch out for people capturing my queen now.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Okay, we like that. What's the best move for white in this position?
Best move for white is capturing the pawn on g7. I don't think he defended that.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Then we have knight f6. And what's the best
Okay.
move for white now?
Capturing a rook on h8.
It's not actually. You absolutely can capture the rook on h8, and it's still definitely winning position.
Oh, yeah, you could checkmate. You could checkmate on f7. You
Yeah,
tricked me.
I
No, like, see, a dude is
don't
gonna embarrass me. It's
know, man.
still winning.
That's
It's
that. Yeah,
still
it's
winning,
still
guys.
winning.
Wherever
It's
the camera
not a
is, it's
chance.
still winning.
That was
All
epic, man. Well done. Those
right.
diagonals
Are
that
we
you just
done?
like had a. Yeah, that's the whole game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Nice. So like, I love like when you nailed that. And I imagine some of your audience will have as well, but imagine some other ones in your audience will have done that and missed, especially the d6 move with the bishop hitting the queen. Stuff like that is really tricky to spot in your mind without some kind of visual reference. It can be like really difficult to notice and hold those things. But the more we train ourselves to keep track of that stuff, the less we make those blunders like in games when we can see things. And it's just a really powerful kind of spot, just getting really comfortable with the things that are happening on the board and understanding it when you can't see it, so that when you can, it's easy.
Yeah. And that kind of actually pointed something out too, is that I have a hard time visualizing checkmates. So I'm glad
Oh,
that we did that
interesting.
test. Yeah. Because
Yeah.
that didn't come to my mind at first. But I know
Yeah.
that in my game, sometimes I could potentially miss checkmate at like three or four. So I'm
Yeah.
glad that we went over that.
That's the
Yeah.
other, like, that's the fascinating thing I found. I like that you said that, because often the issues people have, like the blind spots they have in their visualization, actually match up quite nicely with the sorts of mistakes they're making in games. Because if you put it all through the lens of what is our brain noticing in a position and how is it holding that information, like your brain missed the checkmate, and then it sounds like that's a common mistake that you make as well. And maybe your brain's just simply missing those things otherwise. So it's, yeah, it's been a really fascinating journey, kind of understanding kind of how our brains do this stuff. Chess is such a complex, fascinating game.
Yeah.
And exercises like this can really lay bare any issues that you have and give you a way to train.
So how do they do that on your program then? Because I'm guessing they have to open their eyes to do the moves, right? Or I haven't been on your program. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I haven't played on it.
That's right. I've got the full system's got 13 different exercise types that I designed. Some of them are like just audio games, like the one we just played out. Some of them are puzzle type things where I'll tell you where all the pieces are on a board. You close your eyes, listen to the audio. Most of it's audio based. And you try and find the best move. Some of them are things I like to call find the blunders, where you have, I'd give you like the, like a PGN basically, like the text notation of a game. Somewhere in there, somebody made a horrible blunder and the opponent didn't punish them for it. And you have to try and find, like visualize the game as you're reading the notation and find the bad move and what should have been done instead.
So
And
you're
those sorts of things,
mostly,
which is,
so I'm guessing you're mostly trusting the player to actually close their eyes and actually visualize it than just going through the game and just finishing the program.
yeah, pretty much. I mean, like if they do that, they're cheating themselves
Yeah.
out of the training, really. Like
Okay. Just making
it's
sure for all the
like
audience to know this, it's like you're not accomplishing what he created. You're not accomplishing anything actually, because
Yeah.
you're not gonna ever be able to beat me or beat him. Right.
there is something to be said. Like, this stuff is hard. It's really, really, really tricky. And like, not perfect practice is better than no practice. So if, like, as you're working through audio games, if you record your own material, if you use my material, and you need some of those little crutches here and there just to help you engage with the system, to help you engage with this kind of visualization training and sort of start building that skill, then go for it. But the goal should be at each point to eventually not need those things.
Mm-hmm. Right. And to, for them to do it themselves.
Yeah.
All right.
That's where the magic happens. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Like that. That was an interesting experience, man, because I know you're going to have to look at my past previous podcast. I wasn't as proficient as I am now in speaking, but I did do a visualization episode, a few of them actually.
Oh, fantastic.
On this podcast, and a lot of people liked it, like the training. I did the one.
Nice.
I don't know if you probably already have this exercise, but I did the exercise with only the knight on the board, and you're trying to get to the specific square to the other end. Right? Yeah. And so a lot of people like that type of episode, so that, and a lot of people don't realize that they can actually visualize where the knight is going until they do it.
Yeah.
So
I love that knight. Really, that knight tool is fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just super interesting. Yeah. Some of those classic.
What do you call it on your platform?
I actually don't I mentioned that one. I just call it the Night Tour. So I've got kind of an article about it. I find it a very, very cool, useful additional tool. A lot of the kind of traditional visualization tools I find don't go deep enough, but they are very useful at specific parts. Like the Night Tour will make you very comfortable with night movement, which is obviously very important.
So do you think what we did previously goes a little bit deeper into visualization than doing the night tool thing, which I guess you can argue that,
because if the goal is get your brain good at dealing with chess information, the night tour is super useful for working out how a knight moves, but that's about all. Oh, and I suppose for tracking which squares you've been to, and having that kind of spatial sense of the board. But as far as a wealth of chess information, just having one piece move around or even one piece dodging a queen is not enough strain to force your brain to build up the systems to keep track of it all.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But still really cool. Not to, like, you no know way what to, other... to downplay how good that is.
No, that's really good. You know what other thing I realized too, when I did that move queen to h8, is that, like, I just ignored all the other pieces on the board, which I think primarily happens to beginners too. It's like, I forgot all about the bishop on c4 or the knight on c3. I was like, okay, just take that rook, do it the easy way, get the win. And I think most people need to, like, I know I just did it, but most people need to stop doing that, especially as a beginner, because I know some beginners get into some real trouble doing that. Like, I knew I was still winning, but sometimes you're not always winning.
Yeah, sometimes it's not so good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Worked out well for you, but yeah. And that's the other one, actually. The other thing that I think that points is patterns become really, really important. Like, it's a logical, thematic idea to then take the rook when your queen's on g7. Mm-hmm. It's less thematic to take on f7 from g7. Like, that's not normally how that goes. You don't normally scholar's mate from the side. It's like, it's interesting how brains can fall into those patterns as well. We're just used to things going a certain way. And there's a lot of chess puzzles will prey on that. It can be a really tricky thing to work past. Pattern recognition is so important, and sometimes pattern recognition is actually works against you.
Mm-hmm. No, that's really interesting. Okay. Do you have anything else to share with us?
Yeah. If people are really digging the kind of idea and the stuff we talked about and the visualization training stuff we did, I have a 5-day free kind of email based course of sorts that people can sign up for. I call it my Master Skill Series, and that'll sort of run through in much more depth the sorts of things that we've discussed here and give a couple exercises. Otherwise, people can go and record their own audio. You go to chessgames.com and find a game that's 15 moves or less, and just record yourself reading the notation. That'll work really well as well. My main goal here is to give value. If people decide that they love that and want to come and support my stuff, then that's cool. But I just love helping people impress themselves with what they can do. And so if they do that themselves, then that's a win.
Okay. Where can they find you? So, which platforms? All right, ready.
The website is don'tmoveuntilyousee.it. I'm on Twitter at Aiden at Don't Move. I'm on Facebook as well. Just search me there. And those are my main ones currently.
Are you not on any other platforms like YouTube, TikTok? You're not on?
Not on YouTube and TikTok yet, but maybe soon. And I do a little bit on Instagram, but not much. But that's, yeah, I am on Instagram though, so you can probably find me there, and hopefully there'll be some more stuff coming. But Twitter and my website and my email is the best way to get me. If anyone's that way inclined, I'm also on LinkedIn at Aiden Rayner. Feel free to add me there. But yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us. Thank you for like teaching us like how you started the business and about visualization. I'm pretty sure this is an insightful visualization thing that anybody can follow. So please don't just, I know what you're going to do. All right. Don't forget about this episode, especially if you reach this far. All right.
Yeah.
Implement it. All right. Implement everything that was in this episode, because he just said that this was super crucial for you to improve. So for everybody who's at 750 ELO, you know, if you want to break that barrier, focus on visualization and everything else too, like I said, to sum it all up.
Amazing.
Is that good? Okay, cool. Make sure that you keep on fighting to the end, staying focused in chess and in real life too. All right. I'll see y'all later. Peace.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. All right.